Hello, friends. Trying to figure out how to maximize myself. There we go. I'm big. I'm on the screen. Welcome. Thursday night, 6 p.m. Glad to see you folks. Evil is the destruction of freedom, just like it was last week and the week before. What do I mean by that? Well, evil is the destruction of freedom comes from the book The End of All Evil by Jeremy Locke. And that means... I'm not talking about, like, some people think about evil just in this big universal general sense, like everything that's bad. That's not what I'm talking about. When I'm talking about evil, I'm talking very specifically for this podcast. This is about human beings. This is the context of what we are. We're human beings on this planet, and evil really, in that context, relates to us because things we do to other human beings and things we do to all life can be wrong, right? Our conscience can tell us that things are wrong because it hurts, it harms, it initiates pain, harm, anguish, right? We cannot do that. And that's what we're working towards on the End Evil podcast. Talking about morality, coming to understanding of what's right and wrong, because surely our world is whacked. I'm starting to think we're in the dark ages here, folks. I mean, I'm not saying I don't see a lot of good things and I don't feel joy, because I do. But there's super dark agendas going on around us, and the world is heading in a violent direction, as it has been for quite some time. So we're working on this podcast to change that dynamic, to end evil. And we think that, hey, it can be done. Just like we can clean up the room, we can clean up our behavior as human beings, we can stop initiating harm onto other human beings. So on that note, I'm opening up the talk this week for a roundtable. Already, three gentlemen have joined, and I'm going to bring them in just a minute after I briefly explain the plan today. Over the last 5 weeks, we've been covering symbology, and symbology is the study of symbols, right? So we're looking at symbolism, and we're becoming semioticians. And that was the name of the awesome episode I did with Brandon Martin, who will be back soon. And I'm looking to get some other expert semioticians on here, as well as the three gentlemen. They're going to join me in just a minute. If you're in the audience and you're watching this show, you're welcome to join. You can come on us live today. This is me live. I just got in my office half an hour ago, kind of running home from work. But I'm here for you guys. I'm here for humanity because I care. And working on making a difference is that next step we all need to do to kind of bridge the gap between what's not happening in the world right now. People showing true care, like really showing up for future generations, showing up for the generations that are here right now, and speaking about what matters. What are the very most important things that we should be speaking about? So I started talking about symbolism because it seems like in the understanding of symbolism, there's a key to grasping the bigger picture of what's going on, or to be able to see the bigger picture of what's going on, to be able to pull back the curtain, because things are hidden. The obvious literal world in front of us, the materialistic realm, is obscuring people's grand vision of everything from my point of view. And I feel like the more I've begun studying symbology, the better I keep learning things on this path. Recently, I've been diving deep into the parables of Jesus, and that's going to be an awesome presentation next week that I'm already putting together, and I might even start talking about that a little bit tonight. But without any more ado, I'm going to open up the live roundtable because I've been talking a lot for the last few weeks, and I want to hear what other folks have to say. So looks like I have here to join me today some great minds, and I'm going to invite these guys in. I got Will Keller, Jerry Tappan, and Chris Nelson. Thanks, guys, for joining me. How's everybody doing tonight?
It's a pleasure, Chris.
All right. Excellent.
Right on. Good to see you guys. Well, I don't know how much you guys have caught of the last few weeks. Last week I did Parables of Jesus, and I was covering the mustard seed is the one I'm working on now. I'm obsessed with the mustard seed, but that's next week. Last week I was covering the parable of Jesus about the sower and the seeds, right? Okay, so I'm curious, were any of you guys able to watch that? Any thoughts on the sower and the seeds or past episodes about symbology? Chris, why don't I hand it to you first?
I did not catch the podcast or the stream. I saw some parts of it. You know, it's about teaching the importance of parables, I think. That he's saying that the point of parables, of these sayings, is to view them as parables. So that's one thing in relation to the other, relates to symbolism and correspondence and allegories, and not to take them literally. And I don't really know it that well, but I saw some parts of it, but I didn't catch the whole thing.
Oh, that's all good. Well, you and I share one of my favorite symbols, the Tree of Life, behind us.
Yeah.
Any words on that piece of symbolism?
That's my partner. She's into, she's from Brittany in France. So that's related to the Celts.
Yeah.
And that whole mix of original, like, descendants back there. And originally it was the Gauls, so the Gauls and the Celts and everything. And yeah, she likes that that symbolism.
Isidril, isn't that the tree, Isidril? The one tree?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know much about the symbolism of the European lore. And the
I bet Will could jump in on that one.
Go ahead.
Yggdrasil. Yeah, it does. I mean, the Tree of Life is one of the most ancient symbols. It goes back tens of thousands of years, cross cultures. I would say every culture has, you know, a Tree of Life symbol that is, you know, universally represented cross culturally, for sure.
Yeah, I like the symbol so much because, you know, we got the roots and the branches. And it's this sort of circular, holistic image. And to me, that really symbolizes that there's a reflection in everything, just like the Hermetic correspondence. And just like when you're a farmer, you know that your plant needs roots so it can have leaves. There's a direct correlation between those things. And to me, it really symbolizes, in terms of humanity, how we affect one another. If we don't have good spiritual moral roots, then our humanity family is not going to have a full, beautiful head of hair in our leaves and our tree. And so cutting the roots and cutting the branches is what we're doing in the modern day from my point of view. So, you know, that's a symbol I haven't even really gotten into on this particular series, but obviously we've talked about it in the past. But thanks. Go ahead.
I was just going to mention one brief thing about what you just said, and then my cat showed up and I kind of lost track.
That's all good.
The tree. Yeah, sorry. I'll just jump in after I remember, because I just blew up.
That's all good. Yeah, Will, how about you jump in? You've been around. Thank you, by the way, to Will for being the producer. If folks ever watch End Evil Podcast on the One Great Work Network, that's thanks to Will. And I know he's always having a little bit of technical difficulties here and there and fighting through it. And so I really appreciate that work you do. Thanks, Will.
Thanks, brother. Yeah, just a little bit ago, but, you know, work it out. You just got to remain calm and power through it. But yeah, the Tree of Life symbol, it's one of my favorites. And, you know, interesting enough, that symbol, in multiple cultures, it also has the roots that also attach to the top of the tree. And knowing in the natural world, a tree root system, right? The roots extend almost double the width of the branches of the tree itself. So if you think about, you know, like an oak tree and how far, you know, 20 feet, 30 feet sometimes, the branches can extend out. Well, it's going to be double that under the earth, in the invisible underground, right? You can't see it, but it's vast. And it actually, it's interconnected to, you know, trees that are next to it. And, you know, looking at a forest, that this is all the roots are all mingled together. This, the tree of life represents the interconnectedness of our relationship of all life on the planet. And also, especially in the Norse tradition with the Yggdrasil, the tree of life, it represents the, it's the world tree. So it connects, you know, the heaven and the hells, and all the worlds in between. So it represents growth, life, interconnectedness, and the universal laws that govern everything and creation. So it's a powerful symbol. I love it, and for sure, with the End Evil logo, that totally makes sense. Because if we look at the human condition as a tree of life, then absolutely we can see it withering. It's diseased inside, and it's almost, the disease is almost covert in many aspects because of the mind control, the dogma, the mental illness in certain aspects. It's internal, it's psychological, it's emotional, so it's inside. And, you know, if you know what happens with a tree when it's diseased in the inner, it can look fine from the outside. There are some tell signs, you know, with the leaves, but eventually it will tip over or, you know, break down. The branches start to break off. So the tree of life, are we nurturing a tree that is full for growth and longevity and health, or is it for death and involution? And it's something, you know, it's a philosophical topic, but it's got vast meaning, and it's something to consider as we, as individuals, are microscopic trees in ourselves.
Right. And it's also that symbiotic relationship we have with trees, where our exhale is their inhale and their inhale is our exhale, in a way, in a symbolic way and in a literal way. You know, we share the air and they like the air we're spitting out, and they, you know, we like the air they're putting out. So. They're actually a symbol of life. And, you know, look at the shape of our lungs and the shape of a tree, it's, or broccoli. It's very similar, you know, this blooming plant with all these, you know, abilities, right? And, you know, modern day, I was thinking when you were describing of the poison, it's like, imagine if the whole forest of birds all had little chainsaws, and every time they landed, they were cutting at the tree, you know, like that's the kind of shit we got going on with humans. It's like we're trying to destroy our own environment and our own structure and support system that keeps us alive. Our symbiotic system needs to be respected more than it is now. But I also wanted to, I got Jerry here, and I wanted to send a big thanks for Jerry. He's been helping me out a lot in the last months doing uploads of the End Evil podcast. And he's been diligently every week, you know, going on to multiple platforms. And even the last week, he took on some new parts of that. And I just really appreciate that work you've been doing for me, Jerry. And if it ever gets to be too much, you know, I get it. But well, you have, it's meant so much to me. And thanks for showing up tonight.
You're welcome, Chris. I find joy doing that. It's, you know, funny, but I do enjoy it. And I do want to step up my game and cut some more clips. I've had some ideas here and there. I definitely want to contribute to giving you some slides, perhaps doing some research, helping you with whatever endeavor you're working on. I've had these great ideas come to mind, like sharing your work, but one step at a time.
Yeah, that's the way to go. Has any of this stuff from the symbology stuck out for you? Is there anything you wanted to say about that topic we've been covering?
Well, I almost have finished the symbiotic, or the Brandon Martin.
Semiotician. Yeah, that's a tough word there.
Yeah, that's a really good one. And you made some really good points. I didn't catch the most destructive symbols. I didn't catch that one of all time. And I saw the parables of Jesus. Yeah, I sent you a slide last week I forget which parable that was, but it was about there's this guy just laying on the floor, I think in a desert, and people walk past him, and they could tell.
Good Samaritan.
That one.
Yeah. Oh man, I'll have to find that. What we'll have to talk about what. I haven't seen that yet. Somehow I didn't get it. I'll have to check that out. I'm looking forward to seeing that. But yeah, people, anybody out there who likes the show, who's listening to the show, you know, I'm offering so that, you know, people can get involved with this show. You can create parts of it and I'll share them with the show or, you know, that's why we have these live roundtables to give people the opportunity to, you know, make this End Evil project, not just Chris's project, but Chris and Will and Jerry and Chris's project. You know, everyone who in the world should be part of this project. You know, this is just one show, but I think as much as possible, I encourage people to, this is the work from my point of view, is getting online, is finding a way to get our voice out there and get people to hear it. And they're complex, tricky ideas. And that's why I'm trying to break down some of the trickier aspects of symbolism so that we can learn to study it. You know, so we can become symbol scientists so we can know what's going on around us. You know, we talked about last time in the One Great Work Warriors, the shitcoms, the stuff on TV. And I'm sure anyone here could riff on symbols you see in the public media, whether it's Hollywood or even sports. You know, there's a lot of symbology out there that is affecting people's minds in subtle ways, and how aware are people of the way they're being affected, you know? So that's something we could kind of run through. I'll shoot it to you next, Chris, if you want to respond to that. And thanks people in the chat for being involved. Looks like Leslie, the occultist, Jason Nest, Sarah Cross, we got Libercast, and Crip Rick. Thanks for coming, folks, and I always like to see people in the chat. Yeah, you want to riff on that a little bit, Chris?
Well, I was going to talk about the thing that I forgot that I now remember,
yes,
related to the tree. It's related to a parable. I don't know if it's technically a parable, but it's I don't remember the exact saying, the wording, but it's something along the lines of judging people by their fruits, the fruits of their labor. I don't remember the exact wording, but maybe it's like too specific and too direct to be considered a parable. But, you know, since it uses the term fruits, so we have the fruits of what we sow, what we reap. So we sow and then we reap the fruits of the harvest. So I guess it's like a parable. At the very least, it's an analogy and it corresponds to symbolism. And yeah, so that directly ties into the tree. And I made an infographic many, many years ago where I had, you know, it relates to what Leslie asked to talk about the symbolism of the tree, both good and evil. So this can relate to that a bit. We can look at the fruits as being healthy fruits or poisonous fruits that will be reaped, that will grow out of something. So what does it grow out of? Well, it grows out of our actions, and that comes from our consciousness and our thoughts and our emotion. And that would be like the water source that the roots soak up. So the water, if we have toxic, in my drawing, I had them as like red pools of water or blue pools of water. And the red pools of water, if there's a lot of toxic water, then the tree is going to absorb that and the tree is going to get sick and then it's going to produce toxic fruit. And if you have good quality water, well, then it's going to absorb that and then it'll produce good quality fruit. And so whatever the source we put into the tree, which is, of course, the water, there's the sunlight, but the water is a main factor in the growth of a tree. And the fruits are high concentration percentage of water. And so whatever we put in, whatever we take into ourselves, so we are like the tree and we are growing and we're producing fruits through our behaviors. And that's what we sow into the world, I guess you could say. And so what we take in as information and the quality of our information, well, that will be representative and correspond to the quality of our actions that we output into the world. And what we harvest collectively of everyone's trees and all the fruits together, what is our collective harvest going to be?
Yeah, that's beautiful. I love your infographics. Folks, if you're listening, when you get a minute after the show, check out evolveconsciousness.org. Chris Nelson has some wonderful work there. And the way he kind of puts things on these graphics is just like really helpful. I think I'd be willing to bet, too, going through that process of creating those slides, you learn so much, right? Because, I mean, I know I do when I do, when I put stuff like that together.
Yeah, teaching is a very good way to learn more, because you think you know it and you're like, okay, I understand a significant amount, and then you go to teach it, and then you have to go through more of a self-reflective interrogative process over what you're trying to convey and find I guess better ways to convey it, going deeper into it, trying to see how valid your initial maybe assumptions or understanding is, and try to bounce it off reality, reflect it on reality, see if it's demonstrable and verifiable. And people are asking about sigils. As far as I understand, a sigil is like a conglomeration of symbols. So you can take symbols and join them together and you can form a sigil. And someone asks, symbology is the study of symbols? And yeah, and I think that was answered in I think 4 or 5 podcasts ago on the End Evil podcast. There was one of them where you went into more on symbology and symbolism.
Yeah, we kind of talked about some of the different types of symbols. Everything is symbolism to an extent. I mean, all words are symbols of their meaning, something that we're trying to convey to someone, right? So we utter this sound. That sound represents the thing. So it's a representation. That's all a symbol is a representation of another thing. And yes, to answer someone's question, mind control, symbology is the study of symbols. And so that's why I called the first part of this series symbology, because I'm trying to encourage others and myself to look deeper and understand symbols better. So yeah, sigils are, you know, a lot of times we can create a symbol to describe something we want to talk about, like the tree of life, right? And then I could take a couple other symbols and put them together with the tree of life and put them all on this particular shape, you know, and then put that somewhere. And now I've created a sigil. It's almost like a form of magic in a way, because you're taking all these big ideas, you know, like a picture's worth 1,000 words. Each symbol's worth a whole bunch of words. And then you're putting multiple symbols together so it can have this whole new layer of meaning. And so sigils are... I think someone said complex sets of symbols. I think that's a good way to put it. I think that was Leslie. Yeah. So yeah, I've learned so much. And here's something that it kind of got into on the recording I'm making for the next show. So you might hear this twice if you watch every show. Symbols and symbology are not like literal, you know, they can be, sure. Like a word, right, is literally what we mean it to mean. But symbols, like a lot of times we can see symbolism in a thing and use a symbol and talk about it. And then someone else could look at that same thing and find a different way to describe it. We're not always going to see the exact same descriptions for symbols and symbology. Even a book where it frustrated me at school when some of the teachers were like, no, that's what this represents. Like as if everything could only represent one thing. You know, even if it's not what the author intended, and we as the audience can derive another meaning from it, that does not make that not valid. And that's, to me, the beautiful thing about symbols and the study of symbols is that we can go to all kinds of different levels of understanding, depending on how we look at it. So, I don't know, how does that strike you, Will, what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, no, I absolutely agree. you know, Manly P. Hall, when he was describing symbols and symbolism, it was conveying hidden truths and ancient wisdom, you know, past that surface level of reality. I'm going to put my dog down. Yeah, symbols have, you know, a profound effect on the subconscious and how we view reality. I mean, some of the biggest symbols that you already mentioned are words themselves. Mathematics are symbols as well. And then you have that, you definitely have the subjective aspect where someone looks at a symbol and can extrapolate something different than someone else. So it's a vast world, and it's always been a fascination for me, and it's something that I continue to study. And even sigils themselves, which, you know, the etymology of sigil is like seal, using symbols to seal and make its mark. And those have, you know, more and a more extensive meaning to it as well. And this is why sigils are, you know, extremely popular in occult traditions as well. So, and, you know, when you think of a symbol or a sigil, it's not always occultism, right? I mean, just look at the government and corporate branding. They use sigils and symbols all the time. And absolutely, that is occulted to the average person. They don't understand what influence that is doing to them. You know, on a subconscious level and affecting their behavior. So something as simple as the American flag that supposedly to the exoteric represents, you know, quote unquote, freedom, a free world. When we dive into that even more, it absolutely does not. It's, you know, it's collectivism. It's a plantation. And that's just the sigil of the plantation. So,
yeah, and that money, boy, that's got some symbols on it, huh? And sigils, you know, the whole, look at a dollar bill or any 20, 50, whatever, you know, they are just, there's so much crazy stuff. You could probably spend hours watching YouTube videos about all the weird crap that people find on the money. Why would they do that? You know, I guess, you know, the excuse is we don't want to make them too easy to copy, but why are all these weird owls and stuff? And,
yeah, you know, the little owl is good. It's good to point out to people.
And then, you know, you fold them different ways. I just recently saw one where someone's folding it in such a way that it looks like an alien face. I'd never seen that one before. That's a new one. But yeah, money, you know, and Jerry and I've been talking a little bit about that, you know, dealing with money's tricky, right? That's a hard one, right? They really got us, that's one of the ways that we can really feel the pull of the slavery. And I've done some episodes on money in the past. And so there's an example of pretty obvious symbolic sigil mind control going on right on the bills that you, you know, keep in your pocket. Looks like we're getting a little chat going on here. Oh, yeah, that Yahweh is a pretty interesting thing. Man, there's so much in the Bible, and that's something I've been looking into recently because I'm going through these parables of Jesus. And part of the reason I got into that was because the week before I was talking about the most destructive symbols of all time. And I could bring up some of those slides. I've got them on my screen here, but one thing I recognized when I was looking at symbols through time is that the symbol of the cross has been one of the more destructive symbols in terms of, you know, how many people were carrying shields with crosses on them and destroying other people in the name of God, you know, through all these hundreds of years. There's been a lot, you know, and so I'm not saying it's a bad symbol. It's definitely not. But it's been used in a more destructive way than many other symbols. Would you guys not agree?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Yeah, 100%. You know, a symbol can be a tool, essentially, for an individual, right, to utilize, to convey a message, to convey meaning. And again, still, it depends on how you use that tool. So, I mean, all the cultural religions, the nation states, right, in the name of God, in the name of this nation, etc., and, you know, committing genocide and, you know, transgressions and violations against people, innocent people. That's been going on for thousands of years in the name, using front and center symbols to represent that.
I think one thing that some folks I talk to struggle with is, like, it's easy to be very left-brained and want proof for things. And when we're in our society, I think when we're used to thinking about things, we're used to, you know, having points and being specific and being able to point to somebody. Dropped my mic. Somebody else who has the right knowledge, you know? And the study of symbolism is an exercise, in my mind, in going a little bit outside of that realm of just being literal and just looking at things on the material level and starting to make connections, which kind of requires a little bit of a leap in the mind to make a bridge to something that's not obvious, if that makes sense. How does that hit you, what I'm saying, Chris?
Sorry, I was reading what's
I was just saying,
as a disruptive chat that's not really on topic, but yeah, it was distracting me. The guy talking about other stuff.
Some reptilian. I was just kind of saying how it's not such a left brain thing when we get into symbolism. It requires a little bit of a jump in the mind to kind of step out of the material, literal world and kind of cross that bridge of making a comparison between something that doesn't necessarily obviously have a connection.
Yeah, well, I think it's both, like, if we're talking left or right brain, I think you need to use both. You need to be able to identify things, their differences, so the shapes, the form, the color, what that can possibly convey as meaning, and you can associate it with other things that are not explicitly being demonstrated but have associations, like we can take a circle. So the traditional symbolism of a circle is you could relate it to the sun or the earth. You could relate it, since it has no beginning and no end. That's like the Ouroboros. The beginning is the end is the beginning, or infinite, or the source of creation, like the womb. But as you know, it depends on what you're relating it to. So the circle by itself has that general universal meaning applied to it based on its correspondence with other things like the sun, the vagina, which gives birth to the human life or other mammal life. And but if you look at it in another context with another symbol or a smaller circle, like Nate Kapp has done with the circle dot, well, when you look at it that way, it sort of inverses the symbolism, and he associates it with the negative, going away from the center and having a point, having meaning. So it's aimless, it's more like the chaotic aspect. So it's depending on which way you want to look at it, the symbols can convey different meaning, especially when they're associated with other symbols or other pictographs. Then the meaning can change based on how you choose to correspond it to other things that you can associate meaning with. And a lot of this, you know, the finding meaning in things that aren't necessarily apparent, like you mentioned, we can see that in movies where the movie can depict one, can have its essential plot and the scenes and everything. And just in like a 5-second scene or a 1-minute scene, it can convey something that's essentially completely unrelated to the plot of the story, but the symbolism that it can convey by what that scene represents can be associated with something completely different than even what the movie is talking about. And what comes to mind is Brandon Martin has with the Alien movie, and I think you did a podcast with that a few years ago with him.
Couple.
Yeah. So the, you know, it's coming out of the chest. So that's the demon coming, our shadow that's coming out. If I remember it correctly, that's what the demon, the monster, the shadow, the darkness within us that can come out, and we have to battle against it. And that's the hero's journey. So that's completely unrelated to the movie. It has nothing to do with the movie, but we can see how as a metaphor and an allegory, how it can correspond to some other knowledge that we've gained, another story, like the hero's journey and the conveyance of that, what it's supposed to teach about ourselves and self-knowledge. And so we can associate new creative works and fictional ideas and narratives, and how that relates to other more meaningful things that we can extract information to reflect upon, that can guide us to more insights about ourselves and the work we have to do.
Yeah, and all that's kind of like, I guess, what would you call that? Esoteric, right? It's not simple. It takes some work to look at these bigger picture perspectives, right? It takes some thinking, you know, to compare things in the mind. I'm getting
visual thinking,
right? I'm getting a little distracted because there's so much good stuff going in the chat. There were some good quotes, and then Douglas Martin jumped in, and I'm really looking forward to getting Douglas Martin on here, because talk about a semiotician. He really has a fantastic way of going further back than most people I've heard in history, and talking about like these archetypal forces and where these things come from. He says in the Stellar Cult, circumpolar paradise, there was but one tree as a figure of the northern pole of heaven. Also in the Stellar Cult, the Chinese Fu tree. So like you were saying, Will, right, that keeps showing up all over the place. I really like this quote also shared by Jesus too. When the human race learns to read the language of symbolism, a great veil will fall from the eyes of men. And that quote right there, like, is really hitting on what I was saying. Like, I think it's an exercise we have to learn to do. It's a tool we need to learn to better use in the modern day, to actually see what's going on in the big picture, to be able to decode the reality that we're experiencing. And the truth is, people are very much living in different worlds in the modern age. And that's causing a lot of division among this one great tree of our human experience, that we're all like, think we're all different trees, you know, and that creates chaos. So I don't know. Jerry, do you want to say anything? You want to pop in at all?
Yeah, it's a great point. If a tree is divided, how is it going to stand strong? It's going to collapse. So I think we need to teach objective morality to those that don't know, like Will Keller, his recent debate, I was watching that. Stuff like that. I mean, there's people with these false beliefs that, you know, we're not connected and it's false. And I love what Will said, how like the roots, they're twice as, they're longer than the branches. And man, my mind is blown. But yeah, there's a lot going on in the chat. So that's good.
Yeah, I'm not keeping it up with it completely because I'm trying to listen to what you guys are saying. But I do appreciate folks for sharing. And it's always good to see, the community. I think that's part of this work, is like one person says something and then another person adds to it. And we get these complementary ideas, right? And then that helps another person who's listening get a bigger perspective instead of just their own perspective. Like, imagine if we are all parts of this tree and you're way down on the trunk somewhere, and I'm way up in the branches somewhere, or vice versa, either of our perspective is lacking what the other perspective contains. And so that's where I think it's really important that we find a way to communicate. And part of that is going to require not being so literal and taking everything personally. We have to learn to be a little bit more objective, look at the big picture, and ask ourselves, like, what do these things mean in the big picture of all of us, you know? And that's not easy to do. I think it's like exercise. I think it's something we have to practice. So I'm curious on your process. Have you guys felt like when you come to new understandings, how does that process happen? I guess, Chris, we were talking about that a little bit with creating slides, but go ahead, Will.
Yeah, that's a great question. I try to really stay grounded in versatility. Naturally, I am a visual learner, a visual learner, but a visual thinker as well. And I think this is why I'm attracted to symbols and sigils and seeing the external patterns in the natural world or just day-to-day life. I think this is something that people need to consider and kind of dissect. What do I mean by visual thinking? And this is taking images or symbols or patterns and organizing them to find meaning or some type of pattern, right? And flow charts, mind maps, you know, these are the effects of someone that's a visual thinker, and they help out a lot. But putting it in practice, striking that balance of the analytical and the, you know, the left and the right brain, the analytical and the creative, the visual aspect, that's where the versatility comes in. Like really diving into the inner workings of yourself, just as Jerry was talking about with the roots being double the size of the branches. That's because your internal world has a double effect and it needs double attention as well. And you need to really kind of understand your weaknesses, your strengths, and work on those to strike that balance. So yes, I am a visual learner, and I strive to be more analytical. And you know, I've been doing that for many years. So knowing what is natural to you, understanding your natural talents and gifts, and what you are, what you are magnetic towards, and then also know, you know, what is electric, what you need to pull in and kind of enhance. And for me, it is that analytical. When I was younger, I didn't like to read at all. And of course, once my journey started, I forced myself to read, and I love it now. And there's many other means, but visual thinking goes hand in hand with understanding pattern recognition, symbols and sigils, 100%.
Yeah, and that when I was talking about the most destructive symbols of all time, one thing I brought up was I kind of created a symbol for the show, basically, that I hadn't seen anybody else use in the past. And I chose this character from the movie Mad Max Beyond Thunderdome. And this character in the movie was called Master Blaster. And it was like this big, giant dude with this mask that covers his whole face. And then this little mean guy sits up on his shoulders. And he's like the worst guy in the Thunderdome. He's like in charge of the whole slavery aspect of the place, whipping people and that kind of things. I remember this character, but I thought it was such a perfect symbol or metaphor for our world, the way things are going right now, where we have these very, very tiny percentage of the population that are like the psychopathic elite. And they are basically like just sitting on the shoulders of all of humanity. And we're all like a blind, big, dumb idiot who's doing exactly what this little prick wants. You know, and it's the same thing with the politicians and then all the people. They're prey, you know, to these little clowns on their shoulders that are leading them around, and people are like this big goofy guy in the mask that can't see anything. Our eyes and ears and mouth are all shut because why? Because we're not looking that layer deeper and seeing the reality of what's happening, that all we have to do is throw this little prick off our shoulders and we could be free, you know? And so that's why this stuff is so important. Anybody want to comment on Master Blaster and that symbolism?
I would say that it's similar to The Tiny Dot by Larkin Rose. That's some good...
that's a great YouTube video. Yeah, check that out, guys. The Tiny Dot on YouTube.
It's only like 7 minutes or 10 minutes or something, but it's very, very good. Illustrative of the point of, you know, it's just this tiny dot, which represents the group of rulers, and they're just saying, do this, do that. And all we have to say is no. Like, you're saying, push him off our shoulder, that Master Blaster guy, and say, get the fuck out of here.
I had to look it up. I mean, it sounded familiar. I had to look it up, and now I see. Yeah, now I got the visual of what you were saying with Master Blaster. So if anyone doesn't know what Chris is talking about, look it up. And yes, that's...
Yeah, that's a teaser to get people to go watch The Most Destructive Symbols of All Time. I'm pretty proud of that presentation because I put it together in a really short amount of time. I'm trying to get better at doing that to be able to bring more presentations to this show. But go ahead, Will.
Yeah, you know, that, I mean, the Master Blaster, the little guy sitting on top of this giant man, and the man's got the head cage on. It's very symbolic for, you know, the populace of humanity stuck in the head cage with this artificial veil pulled over them, which they don't even consider at all, right? And the social engineers are kind of dangling the strings and influencing, you know, people on how they think reality is and how they think reality operates. It's a profound, dark spell for sure. I mean, in one sense, you have to somewhat respect the evil of it and the dark will and dark care that these people put forth. And then it also, it's very saddening to see the lack of just willpower and care, true care, that people have to not even look within themselves. Because that's, when you sum it all down, people believe something that's not real, but they act on that. And what they believe is they believe how reality is, and that reality is this way. Well, we got to have rulers. We got to have this. My religion is number one. I have to have this religion. Everyone needs my religion, et cetera, et cetera. So this is the head cage for sure. And it's all rooted in relativism and their own solipsistic, egoic perception. And I think that's kind of a big problem. And that's the cage that people need to shake out of. Your perception isn't reality, right? Your perception isn't reality. Like, it's so hard for people to kind of consider that. Because it's scary for them, for sure, to understand that how they think the world is incorrect. And they have to, you know, they have to look at every aspect of themselves. And guess what? Radical responsibility comes with that. And that's scary for a lot of people. Because it's easy. It's so fucking easy to do nothing, to stay in the head cage. And, you know, it's hard work to be fully responsible, to take action, to fight for freedom. Like, that's the whole goal of this experience, is to evolve. It's not a sideshow or an easy trip. It's hard work. And, you know, that's the point of it. So, yeah, Master Blaster, man.
Jerry, did that give you any thoughts?
Yeah, it took my mind back to Dragon Ball GT, something like that.
Dragon Ball Z.
Yeah.
Yeah, the one after where Goku turns red. He becomes a golden gorilla. But the bad guy, I think he's like this tiny dude. And yeah, I just thought of that, how like evil he is. It's like, even though he might be tiny, like Will said, like, you have to respect that dark care. It's like, but we do have the power, like Will said, to overcome that. And yes, it is hard work because the truth is singular. So we have to do the work to align our perceptions to the truth. And it's radical responsibility. I love that word. I wrote it down, those words, symbols, right?
Yeah, and everything that Will was talking about is all made possible by symbols, because that's what words are. And the belief in authority, if you can imagine, do a thought experiment and contemplate, like, what if there were no words? Could there be authority? And yes, because in the non-human animal kingdom in general, in the animal kingdom, there are social hierarchies and stratas that are solidified based on physical strength that goes around, where you can have challengers that challenge for the alpha male role that then leads the pack or leads the tribe. And that that hierarchy is based on authority, so the one at the top ends up having the authority to decide what happens for the group, for the aggregate. And that's a lower base consciousness modality that we've adopted, and it's even more powerful because instead of just being based on a physical superiority, which essentially can be more easily taken care of by the numbers, when you involve the mental domain, it becomes even trickier to perceive, because it's not just physical, like this one guy who wants to be the king of the hill and he's just like, I'm the big bad guy and I'm the bully and I'm going to push you, all you guys, around, and everyone will be like, well, fuck you, or is going to beat you up. But when it's mental, there's the mind control, the deception, the, you know, talking about their dark care and their dark will. They're all able to do that through the power of word magic. And it's an amazing invention. And someone mentioned in the chat, you know, the dark occultists, wherever, the social engineers, they use symbols for control. What's the positive? Well, there is positive, because all of language already demonstrates the positives in the invention of language and those abstract symbols and how they can convey knowledge, and we can share that knowledge and propagate it into the future rather than just through spoken word of vocalized representations of phonetics and symbols that way, in that form and vibration. We can write it down and convey it to more easily, have it propagate into the future and not rely on word of mouth. And there's also the visual symbolism. Like I mentioned, my infographics, I have symbolism in there related to the trivium and consciousness and understanding ourselves more. So there's always two sides to, like, almost everything has a duality to it, and you can see a positive and you can use it for a positive, use it for a negative, and every bit of technology that humans invent can pretty much be used as a dual tool to do great good or great evil.
Dual tool. I like that rhyme too.
Well said, man. Well said. I actually, real quick, just talking about words, having the voice. I mean, this is one of the biggest things that separates us from the animal kingdom and our animalistic nature as well, right? Animals are all about emotion and feeling and body language. They're not endowed with words, with that voice that we have. This is why, you know, being literate, or, you know, being quote unquote freedom fighter in the day and age, is using the voice. Why we can, is speaking truth, is saying no, using that voice. It's such a powerful human quality to convey these symbols and these sigils. You know, this is vibration. It's magic. It's influence at a distance. This is all the same thing. And this is what separates us, for sure, you know, one aspect from the animal kingdom.
This is really good, yeah. What you're talking about, Will, because I was scrolling back because I was trying to find using people into waking up. That's Marvin says, are there symbols that can be used to portray true morality? And I think, you know, natural law is something that we've all gathered around. But, you know, it is a specific understanding of what those words mean. You know, when I talk about natural law, it feels like 9 times out of 10, people I might be talking to take a completely different meaning from that than what I'm saying, you know? And so it takes a lot of work to put our word out there, like you're saying, Will. And remember that episode we did with the One Great Work Warriors, Jerry? I talked about the biblical verse, the word was God. You know, that was the beginning. You know, in the beginning, the word was God. And to me, what that really means is honesty. You know, like, without our honesty, without our word, without keeping our word and being who we say we are, we lose a bit of being real in this realm. And the way I've described that before simply is, if you tell someone, hey, I'll meet you at 3 o'clock, and then at 3 o'clock, they're there and you're not there, are you really there at all? You know, you're not. You weren't true to your word. You're physically not there when you said you were going to be there. You start to lose a little bit of realness in that person's eyes, who thinks, well, this person doesn't do what they say they're going to do, you know? And so if we're all humans and we're living and we're seeing things going around us that are wrong, we're seeing things on the TV screens, on the road that are bad and wrong, and we're just watching it, and we're not putting out any word or constructive plan to do something to fix it, we're just going along with it. We're actually contributing to evil by not trying to end evil specifically, right? And so that's the point of why I'm here and why this show's here and why I'm encouraging people to be part of what we're doing, is just for that reason. It's so incredibly important to share your word. So that's my answer to Marvin's question. Are there symbols? Yeah. You know, that's why I use the tree of life, and that's why I use the term end evil, and that's why, what were you going to say, Will? I was going on too long.
Oh, no, it's all good. Yeah, no, I was going to say, yeah, there are symbols. I mean, I would say one of the biggest is the scales of justice, that that government and, you know, the justice department uses. They, you know, man's law uses the scales of justice. This goes back to representing, you know, Greek goddesses. Maat used the scale to put your heart on one end of the scale and then a feather on the other. And if that scale is horizontal, if they're the same weight, you lived a moral life, because your heart is not heavy, full of immoral deeds and violations and transgressions. It's as light as a feather. So, and, you know, and if it's off kilter, then, you know, it's not been in a moral life. That's what that represents. So I think scales of justice for sure. And yeah, I would say that's probably the biggest symbol that comes to my mind. Maybe Chris or Jerry.
Hexproof Anarchist said, I hold the flower of life pattern symbol in high regard as a positive symbol like many others. Yeah, some might say it's the Metatronic flower of death, which, you know, that's kind of what we're saying. Every symbol can be turned on its head. You know, I'm sure that evil ones could figure out a way to make the tree of life look bad, you know, in time with enough of their sigils and signs and movies. And that's why we need to be finding positive symbols. And I think the tree of life, the flower of life, the sacred geometry symbols are a perfect place to start. And you're going to see those on a lot of the websites of people that we're talking with who are trying to share natural law. So I think that's a good start. And another one that came to my mind is the yellow Gadsden flag. And when they were kind of telling people, or they had the picture of the snake chopped up, and it was pointing to you that, hey, divided we fall, we're going to destroy it in pieces. And so I've really dreamed a lot about making a new kind of Gadsden flag, maybe with, like, I've thought a lot about the honey badger, you know, fighting four lions or something. We need to have that spark of protection of the innocent and care for what's right, that we go up against as many lions as it takes, you know. And so I'm encouraging people to, yeah, we need to create better symbols and new symbols and put them out the way the dark occultists do. I think we're going to probably wrap up the podcast pretty soon here. It's been about an hour, but I want to go around one more time and let you guys all kind of finish your thoughts, whatever you got jumbled up in your mind that you want to share, feel free. I'll pass it off to you, Chris.
All right. I guess the related to the symbolism for morality or natural law that, yeah, the scales is the most representative. It's certainly what I consider the most ancient, like one of the first to appear to try to represent, convey a meaning of that. And like Will said, it's your heart was your, that represents the emotional qualities, and could also couple it with the thought. The ancient Egyptians who conveyed that symbol and talked about it, the heart, apparently they thought that the heart muscle itself was like the source of our soul. And that's where like mind and everything was, if I'm not mistaken. And you know, who knows, my thinking, my belief, what I think of the past is that all the symbolism came from earlier and they are just using it. And it's not necessarily true that what they used it for, as they wrote about to convey meanings about their symbolism, that that's necessarily what the symbolism represents in totality or what it originally represented. So there's the story that is conveyed through the hieroglyphs, and then there's what we know about certain things and the meaning that we can derive from looking at the symbols ourselves, regardless of what the hieroglyphs say the story is supposed to represent. So we can understand the symbolism ourselves in potentially a deeper way than maybe the contrived and controlled minds at the time were trying to convey an exoteric story to manipulate the masses. And we can understand it in a more esoteric and hidden meanings related to other symbolism and aspects that are more representative of a true reality, as opposed to a contrived reality based on the authority and the law of the pharaoh and going into an afterlife. So you're focusing on a life thereafter in the eternal land of reeds and the paradise. But that symbolism is very worthwhile in understanding, as the heart is ultimately our care and our drive, our desire and our motivations that lead to the action. So it's our desire and our motivations, care and our deeds, our actions, and that's weighed against the feather of truth and the feather of morality and the order. And what did our desires and motivations as our internal lead to the manifestation of our actions, and how does that measure up against that ideal of what is truly moral, the moral truth, not the morality that they were trying to convey in the Egyptian civilization of control through the pharaoh or other authority, but the true morality that a lot of us understand, the objective morality. So I just wanted to mention that distinction between the symbolism itself that we can look at and derive a more accurate understanding of what that symbolism can represent relative to something that's really true, versus how other people have used it and what they're trying to say that the symbolism represents, such as the hieroglyph stories that they left behind.
Excellent.
Will, why don't you go ahead and bounce off of that? And then also, sure. Rick was asking in the chat if you could talk a little bit about how you felt that debate went last night, and maybe let people know where they could check that out.
Oh, yeah, for sure. So kind of just finishing up and bouncing off of what Chris said, which I really liked and agree with. Another just couple quick symbols, and here's kind of a practice. You know, as a kid, there were certain symbols that I was attracted to, and the only difference from just taking them as face value or what most people think and say the symbol is, I wanted to know where it came from. and I wanted to go deeper with these symbols, mainly like the spiral, and I was really into the Dharma wheel when I was younger. And so just asking that question of, you know, how far does it go back? What are the other meanings? Kind of having that mindset allows you to kind of unfold and get into the alternative meanings, the hidden meanings of symbols itself. So we're talking about symbols of morality. The Dharma wheel is a symbol of morality. The word Dharma means right action. That's the etymology. It's a Buddhist and a Hindu symbol. That's where it comes from. It's a wheel. The wheel of evolution is based on moral right action. So that's a symbol of morality and doing the right thing. And I also consider the heart a symbol. Most people, when they see the heart, they think of, romantic love, Valentine's Day, this kind of mushy stuff. The heart represents love and compassion. It's the compass. It's the generative force, the generating force. You can't generate true love without true morality and true ethics. So that's another symbol that I consider as a moral symbol for sure. And as far as the debate was two nights ago. I streamed it on my Wednesday night live show. So it was a replay. The debate was actually live on Tuesday. It was on the YouTube channel, Deliberating Dog Face Dudes, hosted by Alan Marcus, John Rowland, and Benjamin Balderson. And it was Benjamin Balderson versus myself on is morality objective or subjective. I think it was a great deliberation. The structure was pretty good, and of course it was a good space. I know Ben, I respect Ben, so the respect was there, and there was a lot of good points thrown on both sides. Wasn't enough to change my mind. I think Ben was kind of stuck in certain aspects, such as perception, and had some false terms as far as rights and not understanding that there is a difference in the natural world versus our own perception and how we, our worldview and how we perceive the world, and some reconcile, that wasn't missed. I don't do many debates, so it was fun for me. It was good to get that grammar and that rhetoric out there. So I'm looking forward to do more. So people can go check that out. It's on my website, willkeller.com, and also on my video platforms as well. So, and then, shoot me some messages. Let me know your feedback, pros and cons, points, contentions. Go for it.
Right on. Well, I'm always glad to see other folks out there doing the great work. And Will, you're just heavy hitter. Really appreciate all the good work you've been doing, trying to help make sense and simplify the profound for people. So check out willkeller.com, guys. And I'm looking forward to, I'll have to review that debate discussion. And Will, you and I have talked about doing an episode on objective truth and objective morality, objective versus subjective. So we'll have to follow up on that, because I think that's a very important topic that needs more. We need to break it down even more. We need to simplify that. Those concepts, they can get complicated, even though they're, in some ways they're simple. They never stop being complex, especially the idea of objectivity. So I got a lot to say on that, but
yes,
tonight's not the night. Jerry, you got anything you want to say before we close out?
Yes. I think Chris mentioned the trivium, how our actions are a response to our knowledge. So be careful who you listen to. People that say morality is subjective, like, they're poisoning your mind with those thoughts. So just make sure you're taking some good knowledge like these folks over here, and that's all I have to say.
Right on. Yeah, like talked about in the parables of Jesus, we talked about the sower, right? And the way I broke down that symbology or symbolism of that parable is that our words that we're putting out into the world are like our seeds that we're throwing, right? If we're a good farmer, we don't want to just throw our seeds all over the place recklessly and just say things, you know, say whatever. We want to really practice with our seeds and put our seeds where the fertile ground is, you know, and try to not throw it amongst the weeds where it's going to be choked, you know, or on the dry ground where it can't get any roots, right? So in order to speak words that take root in people and help them to realize things, it takes a lot of practice and understanding deeper concepts and learning how to say them. And, you know, it's an ongoing process. I really appreciate everyone who's shown up for my podcast, our podcast. I would like to be more our podcast. Please get involved. There's links. You can find my tap link, share it with the show, and little donations mean the world right now. I really need a new webcam. So if anyone out there wants to show some love to the podcast and help me with that, it'd be great. But otherwise, just share some aspect of the show. Go to endevil.life. Go to evolveconsciousness.org. Go to willkeller.com. And subscribe to YouTube channel and share the shows and start conversations online or with people you know and practice sowing the seeds of truth, freedom, natural law, and let's end evil. Thanks so much for joining me, guys. I'm going to go ahead and play the little End Evil commercial and we'll call it a night. And we'll see you guys next week, same place. And I'm going to have an awesome presentation for you guys. Thanks so much for coming.
Appreciate you all.
All right. Much love, guys.
Hello, friends. This is Chris Hansen. Evil is the destruction of freedom.
I wanted to draw your attention to a couple great things you can check out when you're done watching this show. Pop on over to Twitch and check out Brandon Spencer's 24-hour, 24/7 live stream coming at you with truth, freedom, natural law. All the time, every day. Also want to bring your attention to Mondays. You can check out my good friend Crypt Rick on Revolution Radio at 6 p.m. Eastern, 3 p.m. Pacific. And now, I have a great show for you. Thanks for joining me. Please stop on by to endevil.life and make a small donation or share something from the website. Subscribe to the channels. And enjoy the show.